Which AFC, excuse me, NFC South running back is due for a bump in ADP that is going to be very significant in the first round? What AFC West wide receiver rookie is due for a big time 2024 season? And which other rookie in the NFC is going to affect not only himself in fantasy football drafts, but the rest of his skill position teammates as well? Plus, Mackenzie Kramer, the 12-time FFPC league champion, will join Farrell Elliott and me tonight to discuss so much with his drafts that he's done so far this year as he chases a $1 million grand prize in both the FFPC main event and the Fantasy Pros Championship. We've got a great show for you. Farrell Elliott is here. I'm Eric Balkman. Stick around. Your high-stakes fantasy football hour starts now.
Can't stand the pressure. I've seen greater men than me.
Broadcast live and heard around the world, you are now watching the most entertaining hour of radio on the planet. Welcome to the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour presented by MyFFPC.com with your hosts Eric Balkman and Farrell Elliott. The High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour is your home for analysis from the best players in the world. And now, because no one else was available, here are Eric Balkman and Farrell Elliott.
Silence in the scripture. Are we not all our father's sons? I became a man. Nobody ever told me what a man was.
Thank you, Rob. Greetings and salutations to all of you Balkaholics and Farrelliacs tuning in. Welcome into the latest episode on a special Wednesday edition of the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour right here on the FFPC YouTube and social channels. I am your slightly above average host, Eric Balkman. My co-host is the definitive commissioner of fantasy football, one Farrell Elliott. Coming up on tonight's show, we're going to break down a lot of stuff here for you tonight. We're going to talk about an AFC North tight end that a lot of people have forgotten about that they need to remember for 2024. We're going to talk about a non-DeAndre Swift running back in Chicago that you need to be paying attention about. And we're going to talk about Brock Bowers. What should you expect in 2024, his rookie season with the Las Vegas Raiders? And then, of course, Mackenzie Kramer, the man, the myth, the legend, is going to join us tonight. You can follow him on the X at MacNova. He is going to join us to talk about not only how he's been building his FFPC best ball tournament teams, but his fantasy pros championship teams this year. We'll talk about the Brandon Ayuk situation with him. We'll discuss Jacksonville Jaguars wide receivers with him and much more. So check that out coming up in about, I would say 12 minutes or so. MacNova will join us and we're very excited for that. We are going to also be discussing all the ways that you can get involved with the FFPC right now. The Fantasy Pros Championship has drafts filling each and every day. Why is this significant? Because it only costs $350 to enter a draft, and you can win a $1 million grand prize. I said that right. $1 million grand prize. Remember, if you enter three teams, you will get a $50 discount on your third team, and every third team you join after that, you'll get that $50 discount as well. It's a $6 million prize pool, and you can just plunk down for $350 and win a $1 million grand prize. The FFPC Best Ball and Superflex Best Ball tournaments are live right now at myffpc.com. Remember that Superflex tournament, $35, and you can win a $100,000 grand prize. You can win a $300,000 grand prize in the FFPC Best Ball tournament. And don't forget about the Empire Leagues and the Dynasty Startups, which we have going up. We have new slow draft starting up each and every weekend there. If you want to play fantasy football 365 days a year, we got it here with the Dynasty Startups. If you want progressive prize payouts with your Dynasty Leagues, we've got it right here at myffpc.com. And don't forget about the FFPC main event, another contest that will pay out a $1 million grand prize this year. All of this can be found at myffpc.com. That's myffpc.com. Remember to like this video, subscribe to the channel, comment on the video, share it with your friends and your enemies, and get notified each and every time we go live tonight. Thank you so much for all of you guys tuning in. We got a lot of viewers already here on a Wednesday night, and I appreciate each and every one of you for stopping by. And I want to bring in another guy. I'm very glad who's joining me tonight. The definitive commissioner of fantasy football, one Farrell Elliott. Farrell, welcome aboard tonight. So glad that I'm doing this a little bit earlier this week because we get to talk a lot of ball here 48 hours earlier than we normally would.
Balky, you know, yeah, it's a special privilege to be on the air anytime with you, Balky, especially this Wednesday night here after Father's Day weekend. And a great father like you deserves one more time a happy Father's Day.
Thank you so much, Farrell. I appreciate that so much. It's been a fun weekend with my kids, with my family, and I'm excited not only to keep, like, I got a vacation coming up with them, with the family, which I'm looking forward to, but I also am looking forward to a lot of the drafting I've been doing with KFFSC. A lot of my KFFSC rookie league still going on right now. I'm having a blast with that, and we'll encourage everybody to check out KFFSC.com. But for everybody else, Fantasy Pros, FFPC main event. Has your main event slow draft, is that still going on, or has that reached a close yet?
I haven't checked today, but I think we're in the last few rounds of our initial kickoff classic season slow, and we've got another slow available for players to join now. But this is the earliest we've got ever had a start of the drafting season, and so it bodes well with us. And I was just thinking about your vacation, Balky. Are you coming to Kentucky?
That is a different vacation, and yes, I am. That is it. No, I will. And I can't remember, Farrell, if I brought this up, and we'll just do the production meeting on air. We're going to be doing a show next Wednesday as well, because next Wednesday we'll be doing two shows next week, because that first week of July, I am right out. I'm in the Northwoods of Wisconsin. I can't get a clear internet connection up there. So we'll do two shows next week to make up for it.
You should try Dollywood instead of the Northwoods.
Dollywood might work out.
Do you take the children to the Northwoods?
Yes, they look forward to it each and every year. They're big fans, fishing and boating and campfires and pickleball. We do a lot of pickleball up there. Yeah.
That sounds fantastic.
It's going to be fantastic, but I will say not as fantastic as Louisville is going to be this year, which I'm looking forward to that as well, drafting live in all those leagues with the KFFSC. And you can draft live too. KFFSC.com is where to go for that. Sign up for those main events right there as well. And some of the players that you're going to know for the KFFSC will be discussed on the show tonight. But one of the players that we're going to discuss right at the top of the show is a guy that's going to be going in the first round, and Farrell, maybe a little bit higher in the first round than we initially anticipated when KFFSC and FFPC draft started a few months ago. Raheem Morris, the new head coach with the Atlanta Falcons, according to AtlantaFalcons.com, said the team is going to give the ball to Bijan Robinson as much as possible this season. Morris, among his other coaches on the coaching staff and the offensive team there, said that Robinson is a centerpiece of the new offense under offensive coordinator Zach Robinson. Quote from Raheem Morris: in as simple of a form as you could possibly make it, it's get the ball to Bijan as much as you can in as many ideal situations that you possibly can. The Falcons want to get the ball to Bijan Robinson, who did not get the ball as much as fantasy owners wanted to see last year. Now, bear in mind, last year when we thought was a year we thought was sort of underwhelming for Bijan Robinson, he had nearly 1,500 yards of scrimmage. He got in the end zone 8 times. We were underwhelmed with this last year, Farrell. Yeah. I should say we, but a lot of fantasy owners were underwhelmed. Now they see Arthur Smith in Pittsburgh. They see Zach Robinson as the OC in Atlanta this year. We look at the mojo on this, and fantasymojo.com is where to go to check out all the FFPC ADP and everything. You know, I'll just say this. Darren Armani is the godfather of the Pros versus Joes. He does a ton with Fantasy Mojo. He was recently on a Player Profiler podcast with Theo Greminger, and I don't go out and try to get testimonials or anything like that for my website, but he was hanging out in the FFPC chat, and somebody randomly in the FFPC chat said, go to fantasymojo.com. It will blow your mind, everything that's on there, right? Mm-hmm. And I second that. Like, it will blow your mind. So you need to check that out if you're playing in the FFPC. According to the mojo on Bijan Robinson, he's running back 2. He's at the 104. Farrell, you know, not everybody's going to be lucky enough to have a top 4 pick this year. Yeah. But with this news, with Bijan Robinson, and I'm going to go here. Not a lot of people want me to go here, but I'm going to go here. With this news with Robinson, given how much younger he is than McCaffrey, given that he has, again, a much less injury history in the NFL than Christian McCaffrey, and part of that is because he hasn't been in the league as long as McCaffrey, how much are you considering Bijan Robinson at the 101 or even at the 102 ahead of CeeDee Lamb right now, based on this news with Raheem Morris saying, we are going to get the ball to him every time, you know, it's like vote early and vote often. That's what they're going to be doing in Atlanta with Robinson this year.
If I have the number two pick, I'll be drafting Bijan Robinson. And it is fantastic when you look at this coaching hire. When Arthur Smith and the gang moved on, and the GM Fontenot and the owner Blank decided they would have that, they interviewed like 14 people for this job. And you know, many of them were intriguing choices. But what they got here is a head coach that coaches the defensive side of the ball, that brings an offensive coordinator with him that's never been a coordinator, but's got a great resume and a great family history in the league. And so there's enough to the head coach is familiar with Raheem from when he was there before running the defense. He's a defensive coach. He brings in a fellow Ram coach that he knows well, and he says, we're going to get this job by giving the ball to Robinson, and that's what we're going to do in the interview. Now, I think everybody said that in the interview, but here you've got somebody that said it that the owner trusts and the owner has history with, and so we're going to see it. But I'll tell our fantasy players, if you drafted Bijan Robinson in the first round last year and your fantasy team did not do well, it is not Bijan Robinson's fault, as you so eloquently pointed out there, Balky. So, yeah, it's all going to run through Robinson in Atlanta. Defense is going to be a big, big part of the game. They're going to set on some leagues. They're not going to take chances if they can get ahead in the games. And I think a great drafting strategy is to put Bijan Robinson together with one of the other skill players in Atlanta and go get that quarterback. Because this quarterback, if you realize what they're going to have to do to take away just to complete dominance from Robinson, and they take one player out of passing coverage, with this veteran quarterback and the weapons he's got, he can tear that up. So I think it's a grand year for Atlanta. I move all these guys up the board in a $77 classic draft that I'm doing. And I apologize to all my fellow players in there because I've timed out on the second round pick and I went to 2 minutes on the first round pick, and I really shouldn't be in this draft because I don't have time, but I wanted to be drafting. I apologize profusely, but the player with the number one pick jumped in there and took Robinson.
I will say this too, you know, Dave Nowitzki bringing up a good point from the draft here tonight. Will Cousins give him the ball? And I think this is important to understand too, because with Kirk Cousins and, you know, whether it's Cousins or Penix, throwing the ball in Atlanta this year, both of these guys are downfield passers, right? They love to attack downfield, and they're going to have the opportunity with Kyle Pitts and Drake London, so on and so forth. Darnell Mooney is another guy. I am of the opinion, after I read these comments from Morris, I don't view this necessarily as 100% coach speak. Yeah, there's something in there, but I do believe that they understand that Robinson is one of the more talented players on their team. Cousins is going to push the ball down the field. Penix would push the ball down the field if he gets in there. They're still going to find ways to get Robinson the football. So I whether it's Cousins getting the ball or not, I don't know. But I know he is going to be fantasy worthy. I know he is going to pick up a lot of points this year. And I know if you have a top three pick, you need to strongly consider him. Farrell just said 102 is Robinson for him. And there's going to be some drafts that went 101. You know, what's funny about this, Farrell, is Aiden LaCorey and I were covering a Fantasy Pros Championship draft live last night. The 101, Amon-Ra St. Brown. So anything is possible with these drafts. Robinson will be going at the 101 in some of these drafts for sure as well. Now, the Dave the Dizzle Gerzak chiming in. No way I draft Bijan over CMC. McCaffrey and Hall just catch so many. Sean Green, Balky, is that an Orange Julius? This is not an Orange Julius, although that would taste very good right now if I was drinking it. There is most people are going to say McCaffrey over Robinson. I have no problem with that. If it was up to me, I would still be taking McCaffrey over Robinson. But I will consider Robinson at the 102. He might be my 102 like he is with you, Farrell. And I think, and regardless of that, people who are drafting in the Fantasy Pros Championship, the FFPC main event going forward, who have the 102 and 103, need to understand that there will be some drafts where Robinson does go 101 for sure. Robinson,
the Dizzle, go ahead. The Dizzle is posting facts.
Here you go. McCaffrey, 395 fantasy points. Bijan had 226. That is not a gap. That is a chasm. Now, I love the Dizzle. He's one of my favorite people on planet Earth, regardless of fantasy football or not. But I will say this. You are drafting for 2024. You are not drafting on last year's stats. We are drafting on this year's stats. Now, here's the thing. I don't like doing this, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to ask myself a question and answer. Could McCaffrey have another year like that? Absolutely.
Of course he would.
The history of running backs at his age back that up?
Probably not.
Farrell says it doesn't matter.
The guy's a freak. He's always been a freak, and there's more freaks coming because the world of the NFL, how players prepare for games, how people live with games, how people take care of their body, how just the world of football and the training room has changed. The age, what was happening 5 years ago doesn't matter. What was happening even 3 years ago doesn't matter.
I will say this. Farrell, I've said this over and over again. I'm a weak man. And if I have the first overall pick, I am taking McCaffrey over Robinson. That said, beware the career year, right? Yeah. Robinson might have been hamstrung because of his OC and because he was a rookie and because of the offense last year. And he might have a big-time year this year. McCaffrey might have overextended himself last year. That might be the best year we see from McCaffrey for the remainder of his career. I'm not saying it is, but I'm saying it's a very real possibility that it is. So if you want to take Robinson over McCaffrey, I'm not going to stop you. But I will say, as it stands right now, if I'm facing a choice between McCaffrey and Robinson, I will go McCaffrey. Robinson will be my next pick over CeeDee Lamb, over anybody else there. That's how I stand on it. Let's talk about another rookie receiver here. In Ladd McConkey, who signed a four-year contract with the Los Angeles Chargers. It is the richest for a number 34 overall pick in the league, in NFL league history. Now, bear in mind that the contract that McConkey signed from the 34 spot this year would have bested what they would have paid a quarterback from that spot this year. I'm going to repeat that. If the Chargers would have drafted a quarterback, they would have paid McConkey more than what the quarterback should have been slotted to make here. This is very, very interesting because a lot of the comments coming out of Los Angeles have been very positive about Ladd McConkey. Justin Herbert says he feels like he's throwing to a 4 or 5 year veteran. And this team lost Keenan Allen. It lost Mike Williams. It lost Gerald Everett. It lost Austin Eckler. All those players are gone. There are a ton of targets to be soaked up in Los Angeles. Farrell, we look at Ladd McConkey's ADP in the Fantasy Pros Championship right now. Wide receiver 38 at the 709. I would say that's way too high for a second round receiver. Then I look at the situation and I say, you know what? I want to be in business with that player at that spot. How do you feel about him?
I think it's way too low. I can tend to get burned on rookie receivers, and you've got to know their role and you've got to know their spot. We had a rookie receiver, Flowers, come out that I absolutely adored and had to get all on my fantasy teams. And I overpaid for him in most situations, but I was satisfied with what he did for the teams last year as a Baltimore Raven. I would be equally satisfied with what this player does, but you're going to have to realize that they are run the ball organization. But McConkey is the type of player that they picture for success. There was no accident that they chose this player. There wasn't any hesitation that they chose this player. This was their guy, and he fits in perfectly with this. And it's going to be a great aid to the quarterback. You know, it's just a different look and a different team out there. They're going to be one of the most fascinating teams to watch. And I would say get in business with your Chargers.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of risk there. And for a guy who could collect it, he's not going to be this year's Puka Nacua, and I don't think I'm breaking any news by saying that. But when you talk about a player that you can get at that level who could be the number one receiver or number one pass catcher on an offense that might struggle to keep up with the other teams in that division, I'm on board with McConkey. You know, what's funny about this is I've had the opportunity to draft him in numerous spots and I've only selected him in a couple. And every time I like pass on, I'm like, God, I screwed that up again. You know what I mean? It's like one of those things. I think Ladd McConkey is a guy that I really need to zero in on this year. And he's a player that I'll be focusing on in my KFFSC drafts going forward, and viewers should be doing with their FFPC drafts. Jaden Daniels, another rookie, apparently, according to Dan Quinn, the new head coach of the Washington Commanders, let's try to separate the coach speak here, but he says Jaden Daniels is, quote, further along than you probably should be. Now, they have not committed to him as the starting quarterback for Washington, as Matt Eberflus and the Bears coaching staff has with Caleb Williams in Chicago. But so far, Daniels has handled the majority of the first team reps in OTAs, rookie minicamp, and mandatory camp as well. And offensive coordinator Cliff Kingsbury, the pioneer of the horizontal raid, has also talked about how high the football IQ is for Jaden Daniels. Now, given how much they invested in him, how many reps they're giving him in the preseason activities right now, and the fact that they're praising him and not tearing him down like, you know, somebody else might with their other rookie quarterback here, Chicago, whatever. We're probably going to see Jaden Daniels as the starting quarterback for the Commanders in week one. If you are looking for a quarterback that has a high ceiling with maybe a still high floor, I think Jaden Daniels fits the bill despite him being a rookie. I've probably passed on him too much this year, Farrell, as my starting quarterback or as a high-end backup quarterback. But I'm starting to think that Jaden Daniels is a guy that I need to get more shares of. And I also think, as a result, I need to be bumping up guys like Ben Sinnott, but guys like Terry McLaurin, guys like Jahan Dotson. I'm really liking what I'm hearing and seeing out of Washington with Jaden Daniels. How do you feel about the situation?
Add Austin Eckler to that group. Yeah. He has sure-handed, short yards passing game receivers. He's got some talent at tight end. He's also got a veteran at tight end, so he's got rookie and veteran talent at the position. The rookie quarterback leans on the tight end. It's another team that wants to win with defense. I'm not a big thrill about his offensive coaching, but nevertheless, I agree with you. And I have no shares of him, Balky. Mm-hmm. And that was probably a mistake. The thing that we're dealing with is so many talented quarterbacks in the double-digit rounds, and we talked about that last week, that it's when you begin to look at Daniels, you say, well, do I want tried and true in the 14th round, or do I want to go with the rookie? And it's hard to make a case that you should get this rookie. But if, you know, for the people that are still playing in the best ball tournaments, and that this is an excellent pick.
I want to bring on Mackenzie Kramer here in a little bit, who's noshing on the shrimp toast and crudité we have in the green room right now. But before we get to him, question from Dave the Dizzle Gerzak in the YouTube chat. Has Justin Herbert dropped off too far with all of the run game talk from Jim Harbaugh? Now, this is interesting because, and by the way, this is totally something we're talking about. Now, we know that the Chargers do want to run the football with Jim Harbaugh in charge, right? They let all these pass catchers go in the offseason. They want to run the football. Justin Herbert has fallen to quarterback 17 at the 13-10. Farrell, here's how I feel about this. I believe it was the great Mike Tyson, who was a champion heavyweight boxer for years, said that everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. The Chargers, the way that team is set up and the teams they're going to be playing against this year are set up to have that jaw hanging out, just ready to be punched in the mouth. Mm. I think it's fine to say you want to run the football. I think 32 teams in the offseason every single year say they want to run the football. And then the season starts, plans change, things change, and all of a sudden not everybody's running the football. I think Herbert has fallen too far. I think Ladd McConkey is a great pick. I think Joshua Palmer, where he's going, is a fantastic selection. You want to talk about the pass-catching running backs for the Chargers right now? Grab them. See what happens. Like that is anybody's backfield to get right now. Everybody is depressed in Los Angeles because of the shape of the team, because of the change from 2023 to now, and because of the head coach, specifically with Justin Herbert, like the Dizzle was talking about. Quarterback 17. At the 13-10, you're telling me I could get Justin Herbert as my backup this year? Hell yeah, I'm on board, and he has fallen too far.
You're exactly right, Balky. You know, down in distance, when you say – when you talk about Harbaugh wanting to run the ball, you know, how compare that to what came before. In down in distance situations with the Chargers last year, you knew third and three was a pass. You had an ailing Austin Eckler, and you never had a big back there. You know, Joshua Kelly, who I admire as a running back, just was not big enough to pound and get those first downs. This team, it seems like they could never get out in front of the chains with any of their run. And that's what we're talking about is when we talk about wants to run the ball, the priority is setting up Herbert into situations that when they do pass, they're high volume completion rate passes. And it's a situation where, again, if you bring a safety up, if you can no longer drop a linebacker, if you have to support that running game, Herbert with McConkey and these other receivers is very accurate downfield and a very big presence in the pocket. So, yes, it's a steal.
I think that a lot of people would be on the surface would be like having a little trepidation about drafting him because they remember where he went last year. Mm-hmm. And you have to understand that he is going, six, seven rounds later this year? Mm-hmm. Draft him as your backup. If he doesn't work out, he doesn't work out, and you drop him. But this is a guy that you could draft as your backup, and he could very quickly become your starter. Very bullish are Farrell and Balky on the Chargers offense this year. Let's find out how another guy feels about it. We've kept him waiting way too long, ladies and gentlemen. He works for the Entertainment Sports I forget what it's called. He could tell us better than this. Entertainment Sports Production Network, ESPN, I think it's called. He's a researcher there for ESPN Bet. He formerly is of College Game Day, the basketball program there, and, of course, Matthew Berry's fantasy show. You follow him on the X for his poker exploits at Mac_poker. You follow him on the X for all of his fantasy football and everything else at Mac Nova. Please welcome in the 12-time FFPC league champion, Mr. Mackenzie Kramer. Mackenzie, welcome on tonight. Thank you so much for joining us.
Man, that's a heck of an introduction. The crudité in the back room was pretty nice, at least. You're even giving out my burner account on Twitter. That's the research you did into me. I like that.
You have no underground. You're a well-known.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like burner or not, we're gonna find you. We're gonna promote you, and we're gonna do everything. So what's your true passion? Is it sports or is it poker?
It's both. I mean, sports has always been my passion ever since I was basically in grade school. I'd be bringing sports magazines to dinner with my parents and playing fantasy football since I was basically 11, 12 years old, going on Yahoo. I don't know if I can say Yahoo or working for ESPN on this screen, but I'd be going on the message boards and trying to get in leagues, and I'd be doing like 15 leagues, making new email addresses to make accounts. So I've been obsessed with sports since I was a kid. Poker's kind of a newer love. Well, not really newer, since high school. So almost 20 years now since the moneymaker boom. But
I thought you did a great job in your appearance in Molly's game. You know, have a vet like you right around the table. You know, it's obviously that you're made for the game.
I thought it was tremendous. Like, and nobody thinks about that, right? Jessica Chastain, Idris Elba, right? Michael Cera, and then Mackenzie Kramer. Not even with a cameo, like just like one of the main stars of that.
You had to know who he was, but the insiders knew.
Right, the insiders definitely knew. Let me ask you, so we know you work for ESPN for a living. Can you tell us a little bit about your path of how you came from being a kid obsessed with sports to working for the Four Letter Network?
Yeah, so I was always obsessed with sports for a long time. As I went over for a while, I would post on message boards all the time growing up. And then when I was in college, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I just know I wanted to be in sports. So I started writing. I started my own. I'm a New York Jets fan, so I used to have a New York Jets blog that I kept up for a couple of years in college. I started writing for Bleacher Report back when anybody could just sign up and start writing for them. I was one of the people who did that. I can even put on my resume that I was technically a senior writer at Bleacher Report, which sounds a lot better in retrospect than it probably was at a time But I probably wrote, I don't know, like 75 articles for them. And I even had some articles reprinted on ESPN and CBS and Fox back then. So that was pretty cool. And then I got a part-time gig at ESPN from the start. It was part-time for really 3 years. So I spent a lot of time working my way up and trying to get into a full-time gig there. And then I've basically been a researcher for 10 years, bouncing around the country working with ESPN. So been there for 14 years now.
Who was the person that hired you at ESPN?
Oh God, that was a long time ago. I don't even remember the names anymore. I mean, in terms of the managers, Mike Gersh was the head of research when he first hired me. He's long been gone from ESPN, but there have been a lot of people who've come and gone since I started ESPN a long time ago.
So let me ask you this, Mackenzie, because I did the same path with you with Bleacher Report, where like literally anybody could start writing. Like I started with another site and somebody, do you remember King Kaufman at all?
Sounds vaguely familiar.
King Kaufman is the guy who brought me on with Bleacher Report. And I can't remember what website I was writing for way back in the day, but he brought me on there and he was sort of the guy who got me started on Bleacher Report till I couldn't do it anymore because I was buried with like my normal job or whatever. And so it was one of those things. But I think that's so fascinating that you came up that way and now are doing all this great stuff for ESPN. I do want to talk about some stuff. And I know Farrell wants to ask you about the Jaguars receivers. Before we get to that, general draft strategy. We don't get into a whole lot of this on the show, and I wish we would, and this is my fault for not asking our guests this more. But let's talk about when you're drafting in the Fantasy Pros Championship for $1 million. Do you have a set roster construction, be it the first 5 rounds, the first 10 rounds, the first 15 rounds, or do you want to have like be at a certain spot with certain positions? I want to let you take this however you want to do it. But when you're drafting a Fantasy Pros Championship, regardless if you're at the front of the draft, the middle of the draft, the back end of the draft, how do you like to build your teams, let's say, for the first half of the draft?
So especially in a full PPR league like the FFPC, I like to target wide receivers early. I think that they have the highest weekly ceiling, and it's the most kind of talent-driven position. Like a running back is so opportunity-driven. Like you could be a very talented running back, but if you're not getting the touches, it's not going to matter. Whereas you're a wide receiver and you can get on the field and you're talented, the ball's going to find you. So I always like to attack the wide receiver position early. In fact, I even have some trouble in the drafts because I look at most rounds and I'm like the first – really 9 rounds or so, I look at wide receivers and I want to take one like pretty much every pick. So I have to kind of force myself to deviate from that, so all my teams don't look the same and have no running back positions on it. But my main goal is the first 3 rounds. I usually want to go with a pass catcher in each one, and really the first 4 rounds. The receivers in the 4th round seem to have been rising a little bit recently, so the end of the 4th round can get a little bit dicey. I also think that there's a pretty big receiver cliff after like the Roma Dunze, Brian Thomas, Jameson Williams, JSN, that kind of tier. There's a pretty big gap there. Usually that's like mid ninth, late ninth, somewhere around then. So I want to try to have usually 6 or 7 pass catchers by then. So usually like 5 or 6 receivers and a tight end. I also like to get a tight end pretty early in the FFPC with the 1.5 points per reception there. I like some of the later tight ends, but if you can hit on that upside of tight end, that gives you such an edge over your competition. So I'm typically drafting 0 running back teams. I've dabbled a little bit with the early quarterback, especially if I can get them stacked. I have some Lamar Jackson, some Jalen Hurts, but I always find my teams look the best when I wait on quarterback. You guys were talking about that earlier, but if I can get 2 quarterbacks, double tap them in rounds like 11 through 13, that's my ideal draft, especially if I can get them stacked up. So to me, I want to get a bunch of pass catchers early, and then I kind of hold off a little bit and get a couple more upside rookies late. And then I kind of just jam running backs typically between rounds, you know, 7 and 15 or so, especially if I'm a little bit, especially if I have my wide receivers taken care of by then.
You've been drafting it. Hold, I'm sorry, real quick, Farrell. I'm sorry to interrupt you. You've been drafting the FFPC for years. Do you feel like 2024, it's easier to wait on quarterbacks this year, Mac, than it has been in previous years?
I don't really think so. I do think that quarterbacks are a little bit more appealing at that stage than normal. I mean, I've been burned a lot by drafting rookies. I mean, I was a big Trey Lance believer when he was pretty young. So sometimes you get burned by those rookie quarterbacks, but you know, like a guy like Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams, both those guys have rushing upside. They're not always top 12 quarterbacks. Trevor Lawrence was the 7th quarterback or so last year. You can usually get him in that round, that area. Brock Purdy, the quarterback of maybe the most talented offense in the NFL, who put up big numbers last year, he usually falls pretty late. And then, you know, you guys were just talking about Justin Herbert before. I'm not a huge Justin Herbert fan, but if I end up with Justin Herbert and Kirk Cousins, like that's kind of the last 2 quarterbacks I feel a little bit comfortable with starting. So I try to get 1 or 2 by then, but I think you can wait pretty comfortably this year. And I used to wait in the past to mix results. I used to always joke that Philip Rivers would always be my quarterback in redraft because he'd always be like 13th quarterback off the board. But I think it's similar to how it's always been, honestly.
That Trey Lance burn is something you're still rubbing cream on. That's rough. And that's a great question. You mentioned two things. One I want to get to at Jacksonville, and one I want to get to at Pittsburgh, as you talked about the position. The first is Jacksonville, a new receiver in the mix in the rookie Thomas. I love big, long receivers, and this kid needs some body mass. He's very young. There's nothing not to like about this player. But I absolutely and historically have loved Christian Kirk. And I think Christian Kirk's going to catch 5 passes every game, and he's going to find the end zone probably 6 to 8 times during the season. His season was truncated last year with injuries in week 12. Your thoughts on the disparity between these two players? Would you put both of them on a roster of your same team? Because I think Balky will give us the mojo, but I think that capability there, the rounds are somewhat separated. Just your thoughts on the veteran Kirk and the rookie Thomas.
So I try not to double up on receivers on the same team unless they're both going either really late or there's significant value on both. And I do think there's some value in both. I just try not to do that because to me, the ultimate upside of a wide receiver often involves the other guy either getting hurt or underachieving or whatever. And then one guy consolidates the targets and then you can win that way. But I kind of like both of these receivers. So I'll start with Brian Thomas, who he literally might be my favorite pick on the board right now out of any player in the FFPC. I think he's receiver 48 right now. I just saw in Fantasy Mojo. Like, to me, he's a first round pick on a good offense with good size, good speed. He had 17 touchdowns last season at LSU. He was very productive in college. And as much as I like Christian Kirk, I think Christian Kirk's more of a complimentary receiver. And, you know, he's a very good number two receiver. And Gabe Davis, as we saw him in Buffalo, like, he's a nice deep threat, but I don't really look at him as a major threat. There's opportunity there on the Jacksonville depth chart for Brian Thomas to rise. I think he should be going in the Rashi Rice, Jordan Addison, DeAndre Hopkins, Ladd McConkey tier. I think he belongs to be right near all of them. I think that he has significant upside. And Christian Kirk, my only issue with Christian Kirk is that I think right before him, there's a big bit of a receiver tier drop. So I always feel a little bit, I don't love taking Kirk in the late fourth, early fifth when guys like DJ Moore, DK Metcalf, guys like that are going, you know, 6 to 8 picks before. But if I can get Kirk in the sixth round, like if I'm looking at Kirk and T. Higgins, Amari Cooper, all those guys, like I like Kirk just as much as any of those guys. So I think Kirk is a fine pick at ADP, but I love Brian Thomas at his ADP.
All right. I'm sorry, Balky, go ahead.
Yeah, just to kind of what you're talking about, Farrell, with the mojo on this, Darren Armani has over the last 5 days in the Fantasy Pros Championship, Christian Kirk 5'10", Brian Thomas 9'08". Kirk, wide receiver 30, Thomas, wide receiver 48. Mackenzie, you're of the opinion that Kirk has the better numbers for this season, but Thomas is the better value 4 rounds later, right?
Yeah, that's probably a fair way to put it. The other thing, too, is like I said, I like to go receiver pretty heavy early on. So yes. A lot of the time, Brian Thomas is my 5th receiver. And if he's my number 5 receiver, you got a first round pick and a good offense with good measurables. That's exactly what I'm looking for there.
I'll remind everyone that in his rookie year, C.D. Lamb went in the 9th round in a situation where there were plenty of opportunities for the quarterback to throw the ball, but two other receivers. But yeah, the quarterback loves talent. Yeah, I think you've got it. I think you've got it right, McKenzie. That's a very good point. And if Ladd is going that high in the draft, this player's got the resume to do it too. Okay, quickly, I don't want to get off too far off our script, but Balky and I had something we wanted to talk about at the tight end position. We've had lots of people come on the show, and people in the chat room agree that there are 7 elite tight ends, and Ferguson represents the floor of the tight ends. But if I were to pick a comeback player of the year in fantasy football, that would be Friermuth at Pittsburgh. And I'm curious what you think about this player as we're talking about the 9th round. I think that's where he's going. Here's another value that I think is going to way outperform his draft position. Do you agree with me?
I'm a little torn on Freiermuth. I mean, I just looked at my exposures and I literally have zero Freiermuth clicks through 37 drafts. So wow. Based on that, I'm not that high on Freiermuth, but like, I don't hate the pick. My only issue with that is Arthur Smith has been adamant that they want to run the ball. He showed that in Atlanta that that's what he wants to do. I think this is going to be mostly a run first offense. I don't typically target the tight ends in that area between Dalton Schultz and TJ Hockenson, Cole Kmet. If I were to pick a favorite guy out of that tier, it would be Freiermuth. I think that actually he does have the capability to be second in targets on the Steelers. So perhaps I am overlooking him a little bit there, but I haven't really been clicking him because usually I like to go. I think the value on most of the early tight ends is very good. So usually I already have one by then. And at that point, I'm chasing running backs at that point. So if I'm looking at Pat Freiermuth, who I think can be a good tight end, I don't think he's going to be an elite tight end or a league winner for you. I'm chasing running back upside at that point. I don't think there's a huge gap between the Freiermuth, Hockenson, Kmet tier and like the Jonnu Smith, Chigakonkwo, that kind of tier, though we did just lose Juwan Johnson, who was a guy I liked out of that group.
Pat Freiermuth, tight end 14, 8-12, as McKenzie pointed out, in that Hockenson, Schultz, Kmet neighborhood, right? And if that's not a spot you're targeting tight end, then that's not a spot you're targeting tight end. I think that's fine, especially the way you build your teams. And you build your teams a certain way, Mac, for sure. I do want to get back to the draft positions here. This is something that has been polarizing basically since the dawn of time of fantasy football. You know, where you want to draft. You want to draft in the early part? Do you want to draft in the middle part? Do you want to draft at the end? Can you talk a little bit about why you think drafting in the first few picks of the first round might not be the greatest idea for teams that are trying to build dominant squads when we get to the third round or the fourth round?
To me, it all comes down to the 4 or 5 turn. Like the other day, my last draft, I had the number 2 pick. And at first, I'm like, all right, good. I get to get either CMC or CD Lamb because I think that there's a clear gap between those two and the next little tier. And then, you know, I like all those receivers a lot too. I think there's really 8 guys and there's a little bit of drop off. But the problem is, who is going to come back to you in the fourth round? Because if that tier of wide receivers is gone, I found myself just sweating, is DJ Moore or Devontae Smith or Cooper Kupp, is one of these guys that come back to me at the end of the fourth round? Because if I have to take a Zay Flowers or a Tank Dell there, like I like those players or Christian Kirk even, I like those players, but I think there's a pretty big drop off there. So to me, there's, what is that, like 44 players or so that I really want to get 4 of. Mm-hmm. And if they don't fall to the 4 or 5 turn, then I don't love getting the top of the draft. I think I kind of like the 6 to 8 range most, because I do think there's really 8 elite players in fantasy. And then there's a little bit of a drop off to the Amon-Ra, or not Amon-Ra, but the Puka Nacua, AJ Brown, Garrett Wilson, Marvin Harrison's of the world.
Let's talk about, which by the way, that is great analysis too, on why you like to draft where you like this year. Chicago, let's go there. And looking at your ex bio, you're in Connecticut, obviously with ESPN, the Entertainment and Sports Programming Network, which I botched that early. So I'm glad I got it right now. I'll never get a job at ESPN. Okay. So Connecticut via Las Vegas, Los Angeles, Charlotte, and New Jersey. Not one of those stops has included Chicago, but we do want to talk about the Bears here with you, Mac. DeAndre Swift is the highest drafted running back with the Bears this year. Is there another sleeper running back that perhaps you are looking at and drafting in your spots this year?
So I think Swift is a pretty good pick at ADP. I'm not really high or low him at that spot, but I think that's a backfield where there's some uncertainty. DeAndre Swift has had multiple coaching staffs not really like what they see by the end of their tenure there. I mean, we heard Dan Campbell kind of be a little bit negative on DeAndre Swift toward the end of his tenure there. So the Bears gave him a lot of money, but by the end of the season, are we sure he's going to be the guy? I'm not 100% sure about that. I think there's a little bit of value in both Roschon Johnson and Khalil Herbert late. My main target out of those two has been Khalil Herbert. And Herbert's a little bit interesting because, first of all, last year at the end of the season, when it was Herbert and Roschon Johnson, they gave the ball to Herbert. I remember week 17, best ball finals. I'm praying for Roschon Johnson to get some touches, especially the passing game. And it was just hand off to Herbert, hand off to Herbert. And he was playing very well for them. But now you're reading some things like Khalil Herbert might be on the chopping block or might get traded or might not make the team. And to me, that's not a bad thing. Like, what if he leaves? There's several opportunities out there that have running back opportunities that could have some pretty high upside. You look at the Chargers. I don't trust anybody in that backfield. You look at the Cowboys. I'm drafting a lot of Rico Dowdle and a little bit of Zeke Elliott, but if Khalil Herbert ends up there, like his price skyrockets in a few weeks. So to me, there's a lot of room for growth for Khalil Herbert. I mean, especially in the fantasy pros, if it doesn't work out, you can just cut him and, you know, move on with your life. But he has a chance to either maybe outplay Swift in camp and maybe get a bigger role there. Or if he gets cut or traded, he might have an opportunity somewhere else. So I've been drafting a lot of Khalil Herbert. He's one of my highest owned guys so far in fantasy.
You know, you're made to play in Kentucky. I just want to point that out to you. Because we start three receivers. You must start three receivers. And there's a poker room there that no Russians are playing in. So those are two things that would be a draw for you to be here. And perhaps another thing would be a draw is that you're talking about these running backs. So I'm thinking of all the teams. Where can we go to find you a running back when you're in love with all these receivers and you're going to one of the elite tight ends? So I'm thinking New England. Is Stevenson and Gibson, are they in your ballpark for guys that you're looking for? And which one do you like the best? And where would you consider them a value? You've drafted these multiple teams already this year. Is Stevenson a value now? And is Gibson perhaps the value later?
I mean, that's the great thing about the current fantasy landscape is you can get a starting running back like Ramondre Stevenson in the seventh round, who was going in the third round last year, the 2-3 turn last year even, and he's shown he has talent. He catches a lot of passes whenever he's healthy. I think he's a perfectly fine pick in the seventh round. I was drafting him a lot early. I had to even calm down because I think a lot of those running backs in the Ramondre Stevenson area are pretty good picks. So I need to try to diversify a little bit more, but Stevenson might be my favorite of that group. Swift's right up there too. So are the Steelers running backs, which I know he might get into a little bit later, but Antonio Gibson is also one of my favorite picks late too, because one thing I like to target too with a lot of these running backs and the offenses in general is sometimes you want to go toward the RB2 because there's just some value there, especially in a place like New England that has a new offensive coordinator. He doesn't have any allegiance to Ramondre Stevenson. They brought in Antonio Gibson this offseason. And Antonio Gibson was a guy that was basically a pseudo wide receiver running back in college. He's shown high upside in fantasy. He was a second round pick a couple of years ago before he fell out of favor in Washington. So he's shown he has some talent. If he gets some touches, he has some upside there. And especially in New England, where there's a massive void for targets there, we don't know who's going to be their leading receiver. Like, I think Gibson has a chance to carve out a role there. So I think that both those guys are strong bets at ADP. I was drafting a lot of Gibson early, and I also like Stevenson where he's going.
Balky, we've talked a lot about draft strategy and rounds. One of the strategies that I've adopted this year, and I would like your thoughts on it, is that once I get to the 11th and 12th round, the running backs for me are just gone. I just can't really find, I'll throw my darts and take my shots the rest of the way with a couple of guys. But are you feeling, do you think that same way too, or am I missing something?
No, I don't think you're missing anything. I will say, like, you cut it off at the 11th round. After that, it is tough, right? Because then you're dumpster diving with the Kamani Vidals, the Ray Davises, the Jaleel McLaughlins of the world, Tyrone Tracy, right? I think if you look at the 11th round, and Mackenzie, you can kind of chime in on this, the 11th round is the last great running back round in fantasy pros drafts this year, because in the 11th round, you have Marshawn Lloyd in Green Bay. You have Jalen Wright in Miami. You have Ty Chandler in Minnesota, right? You have Rico Dowdle, say what you want about him in Dallas right now, but I think there is something there. There is a path to fantasy glory. After that, it is just kind of the dartboard that we're pitching darts at to try to figure out the running back position, which is fine. You still need to hit it, and there are guys that I like after that. I think Tyrone Tracy's interesting. I think Braylon Allen's interesting. We talked about Khalil Herbert already. I think you can make a case for Eric Gray or Audric Estime, but those are all just cases, right? They're all just players that you want to acquire to see what happens. I don't trust any of those players this year. Mackenzie, how do you feel about drafting running backs after round 11 this year.
That's interesting because early on when I was doing drafts a few weeks ago and a month ago, I thought I can get some good running back values in the 12th and 13th mm-hmm. round. I just pulled up one draft I did like a month ago, and it's like I can get Ty Chandler in the 13th round, Tyler Algier is there, Rico Dowdle in the 12th, Antonio Gibson in the 12th. That's usually not happening as much anymore. So I do think I agree that the 11th round seems to be the cutoff of where the running backs I'm comfortable with drafting. Now, the other good thing about drafting in June, though, is you could take some flyers on these cheap running backs and just try to get lucky. I mean, it could be something like, you know, a couple of years ago when Cam Akers gets hurt and Daryl Henderson goes from like a 10th round pick to a 4th round pick. It doesn't even need to be that big of a deal. I mean, we've already seen Braylon Allen go from undrafted in a lot of leagues to being like a 13th round pick because it looks like he might be the backup there. And, you know, if a starter gets hurt, all of a sudden you have a, there's also some ambiguous backfields. Like you mentioned Audric Estime. We don't know who's going to be the guy in Denver. So just take some shots there. And then week one, if you draft a lot of these running backs, especially if you wait on drafting the running backs, you can kind of get to week one and feel like, all right, there's a couple ones that are good and I can keep them. A couple other ones you can cut. And, you know, especially if I go super late on running back, I can draft some of these guys that get the free look in week one, like the Will Shipley and the Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And maybe I can even steal a week if they put up 12 points week one.
I want to we've been talking a lot about running backs here, Mac, but let's talk about Malik Nabers because he's an interesting player this year in the regard that he was not the first overall on average, the first overall drafted receiver in FFPC rookie drafts, right? And right now in the Fantasy Pros Championship, he's going behind Marvin Harrison as well in redraft leagues. He is going at the 312. Which I'd have to rack my brain on this. I'm sure it's happened, and I'm sure I'm forgetting. That is the highest I can remember a rookie receiver being drafted as the number two receiver in rookie drafts going that high in a redraft league. Is he going to return? And I know you're a Jets fan, and this is probably sacrilege to talk about the Giants. but is he going to return that end of the third round value in Fantasy Pros Championship drafts this year?
I mean, I just talked positively about the Patriots for 5 minutes, so I could talk about the Giants just fine. That's not a problem. But I don't think as prospects there's that much of a difference between Malik Nabers and Marvin Harrison. To me, they're both strong prospects coming out, and they're two of the better prospects we've seen come out of college in a long time. Like, just because you're the number two in this draft doesn't mean you would have been the number one in any of the previous drafts. So I like Malik Nabers a lot as a talent. I don't think there should be as big of a gap between him and Marvin Harrison as there is. I understand why Harrison goes first. I would draft Harrison first too, but Nabers was a guy early on a month and a half ago. Like you can get him late fourth round consistently. And I kept looking at it like, you know, mid third round. I'm like, I think Nabers is my favorite guy here, but I keep getting him in the fourth round and then I could just wait and get him there. Now he's going around the 312. I can't really do that as much. So I still think he's a pretty good pick there. I think he's right around there with like the Jalen Waddles of the world. I think he's a very good pick. I mean, a year ago, Brian Daboll was coach of the year. We thought he was an offensive genius, got Daniel Jones a lot of money, and now we all think he stinks. Maybe he just had, maybe he just didn't have great talent last year. Daniel Jones was hurt last year. Like, the Giants offense is likely going to be built around Malik Nabers, getting him a ton of touches. He's going to have a huge target share in that offense. Yes, I don't trust Daniel Jones, but I think between his talent and the workload he should receive, I think he's got a pretty good floor and he's got a really high ceiling. I mean, this is a guy we could be talking about on the 1-2 turn next year.
I think that Daboll surviving the season and not having a heart attack on the sideline should be a victory. I think that was a great victory for him. I think there's going to be a great victory in Las Vegas this year at the tight end position. And my conversations with anyone in the know, you ask if you had the draft today, are you still going to make that move? And they're double downing on Brock Bowers. Your thoughts about this tight end prospect? A lot of our drafters don't like rookie tight ends, and I think perhaps that's a mistake. Brock Bowers in your draft this year.
I mean, Brock Bowers has been my favorite click in recent drafts. I think I've drafted him in like five of my last six drafts, something like that. I mean, he's going at the 6'11 right now. I think that's a steal. I mean, we compare him to Kyle Pitts as a prospect, and it's like, okay, Kyle Pitts let us down as a rookie. I totally get that. Where was Kyle Pitts being drafted that year? Early third round. In fact, I was just looking at Fantasy Mojo. The last, I believe it was August, he was not drafted past the third round once. Yeah. We're getting Bowers at the 6-7 turn. To me, I don't know. I don't want to say it's his floor, but there is so much room for growth here for Brock Bowers. Like, we can get to training camp and we can get to preseason. If he starts playing well in camp, we start hearing good reports. Why can't he be a fourth round pick? I mean, I've seen him even go in the fourth round in some drafts. I'm not saying he's necessarily going to go that high. I don't even know if he's going to a lock to be a great prospect as a rookie, but he walked into Georgia as an 18-year-old, put up 882 yards, 13 touchdowns. Georgia decided, hey, this 18-year-old is the best player there, and the SEC teams could not stop him. I mean, they even handed the ball off to him. He had 5 rushing touchdowns in college, Brock Bowers. This is a guy that is so talented, you manufacture touches for. The only thing I'm a little bit concerned with is he didn't go to the combine. You don't have his workout numbers. Typically with tight ends, you want them to be freak athletes, especially if they're going to live up to the hype. But again, if you watch Bowers on tape, there's also some miles per hour data about how fast he ran. Like, he is up there. He might be the best tight end in college football history. And I'm not even saying that like as like exaggeration. He's the only guy to win the Mackey Award twice. So yeah. Brock Bowers, to me, has a good path to be the number 2 player on the Raiders in targets. I know it's Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew, so it's not exactly a great group. But I mean, Davante Adams has shown a little bit of signs that he might be falling off. His yards per route runs dropped the last 2 years. And if the Raiders aren't good, they could still trade him. I mean, my Jets, I'm sure at the trade deadline, if they're not going well or Mike Williams is hurt or something, they're going to be offering stuff for the Raiders. There's a chance they give up on Adams, and maybe by midseason this offense is Brock Bowers. I'm not saying you should be drafting your team around, hey, some potential thing at a trade deadline, but there's way more room for growth for Bowers than there is for the floor for me.
Malky McKenzie has identified Bowers as a new school Billy Cannon. And where did Billy Cannon play tight end, Balky?
Farrell, why do you ask me questions?
Because
you know I don't know the answer to.
He was a Raider, and he went to LSU.
And he
ran in touchdowns out of the backfield. And he was all over the field. And he was the greatest thing that you – well, you know. Well, Balky, you usually –
he was drafted in 1960. I'm sorry, you usually know these things.
And no. I would have expected you to know. McKenzie, wouldn't you have expected him to know? We got a guy on the show that does research. You know, take the cue from him. It's
all right. I think it said in the intro that they just got the best guy they could, or so Balk, you know. So I know they kept a low bar for Balky, so I get it.
All right. See, so here's the thing. Now I'm a little embarrassed because according to Wikipedia, Bill Cannon was the first overall pick of the NFL draft in 1960, which I did not realize. Mm-hmm. So I probably should have known that. Farrell, McKenzie, we know he played for the Raiders. What were the 2 other teams he played for in the NFL?
That's good.
Now this is interesting because if you guys can get this right, then I will really admit all my shame in this. He played for the Raiders from 64 to 69. He played for one other team in 1970, and he played for a different team from 60 to 63. McKenzie, I know you do this stuff for a living. I don't expect you to know this because this is like 70 years ago, but Farrell might know this.
Well, I'll go with Houston, McKenzie. Houston.
Houston he did play for from 60 to 63. Raiders 64 to 69, and then one other team also in the same division as the Raiders in 1970.
That'd be your Kansas City Chiefs.
That'd be the Kansas City Chiefs. Mackenzie Kramer, excuse me, chiming in to let us know exactly why he is great at his job. He knew that.
One key researcher is you can look things up on the internet. You don't even know everything off the top of your head. The key is finding the information quickly as much as anything
else. As a young Raider fan, I tried to block the fact.
Oh, that he played for the Chiefs.
That he was a Chief. I blocked that out of my memory. I would not, but yeah. So we're returning to the Raiders of the 60s. Just excuse me for my trip down memory lane.
I know that's fine. That's all good. You know, we like to embrace the past, but we also like to wrestle in the future, as it were. And the future for Brandon Ayuk is unknown right now. McKenzie, Brandon Ayuk posted a video to his TikTok a couple of days ago saying that the 49ers don't want him back. This is a player that had 74 catches, 1,300 yards, was in the end zone 7 times last year. He was a first-round pick by the Niners in 2020. This reeks of being a negotiation tactic for Ayuk, trying to get some cash from the Niners. Regardless of that, Ayuk right now, and I talked about this last night on our live draft coverage on the FFPC YouTube channel, Brandon Ayuk, wide receiver 16 at the 308. Mackenzie, how do you handle him in drafts right now properly?
I have a pretty neutral take on Ayuk right now. That might be a little bit high based on the rumors right now. But the only reason I think that is because I think that the tier of wide receivers from basically early round three to mid late round four are pretty even. Like me breaking ties between Nico Collins and Brandon Ayuk and Jaden Waddle and Devontae Smith, I think it's pretty even. So if there's uncertainty around Ayuk, I'll just click somebody else and that's totally fine. The other thing with Ayuk, especially if I'm in the late third round, is Debo Samuel typically goes after Brandon Ayuk in draft. So if I've been late in the mid late third round and they're both on the board, I'll usually break a tie for a non 49er and then hope one of them comes back to me in the fourth round and then take them there. Early on, I was targeting Ayuk a lot. I actually have a lot of Ayuk. I was just looking at 24% Ayuk for me. So apparently I was breaking ties for Ayuk early. So that's not quite aging that well. So I need to balance that out a little bit. But if Ayuk is back in San Francisco, there's a lot of positive things there. I mean, he's obviously a talented player in a high-powered offense, the good contingency value if somebody else in that offense gets hurt. But just the only uncertainty is I don't really like wide receivers when they change teams. That's always been something that I've tried to fade in fantasy. I feel like that doesn't work out that often. What do you got for me, Farrell?
Let's get another rookie receiver from the SEC in the mix because, damn it, we're talking about all of them. Pearsall, your thoughts.
I've been clicking him a lot, right? Just because a first round pick on the 49ers, like that's an appealing pick to me, especially since the way I like to draft, again, a lot of it comes down to that for me personally, is if I have a lot of wide receivers early, I'm not counting on starting Pearsall early. So to me, I have a really high upside backup where if either Ayuk or Debo gets hurt or gets traded, which is also possible, then I might have a pretty high upside player in that, especially drafting now. If we find out Ayuk gets traded to the Steelers tomorrow, Pearsall's moving up a couple of rounds. So that's why I like clicking him now. I don't think that he's going to drop that much further if there's no trade that goes on. So Pearsall is one of those rookie receivers in that area, like Jalen Polk, Malachi Corley, Jermaine Burton. There's a lot of guys in that area that I like to target, and Pearsall is certainly one of them.
I want to talk about, and Farrell, I know you have ripped on me over the years for –
Never.
Rightly so, by the way. Rightly Never. So. In 2022 and 2023 – you felt like I asked every guest we had on about the Buffalo backfield, right? And this is like, oh, Balky, like the two things Balky loves to talk about, his Green Bay Packers and the Bills backfield, over and over again. And that's true. I totally agree. This year, we have a new Bills backfield. It's called the Steelers backfield, right? Because if you look at Pittsburgh right now and the running backs there, Pittsburgh running backs, Jalen Warren and Najee Harris, they're not going back-to-back, but it's as close to being back-to-back as you possibly can get. According to the Mojo right now, Najee Harris is running back 25. Jalen Warren is running back 26. 7-10 and the 801, respectively. Mackenzie, why is Jalen Warren the correct choice for you over Najee Harris this year?
I mean, if I'm being honest, I'm pretty even on both. Mm-hmm. But the thing with me is I just think Jalen Warren is the more talented player. Mm-hmm. And this is another case where in Pittsburgh, we have a new guy calling the plays in Pittsburgh and Arthur Smith, where he's not attached to Najee Harris. He wasn't there when they drafted him. Like everything we've seen for the last couple of years is that Jalen Warren is a more efficient player than Najee Harris. So what's stopping Arthur Smith from looking at that and be like, hey, we need to give this Warren guy the ball a little bit more, which that could easily happen this year. Warren's 216 pounds. I know he's short and he looks a little bit small, but he can handle a decent workload. I don't think he's going to get 30 touch carries a game ever, but if this is going to be a split backfield, I'm just going to make the talent bet on Jalen Warren. At the same time, we've seen how good Arthur Smith has run an offense for running backs, both in Atlanta and in Tennessee. Even though we wanted more from Bijan Robinson, the overall backfield as a whole was still very productive. So I like taking shots in the Pittsburgh backfield. So I like both players, but I pretty much always click on Warren over Najee just because I think that if one of these guys is going to be going in the first three rounds next year, it's probably Jalen Warren.
It's probably Jalen Warren indeed. Totally. I'm 100% with you on that.
And those guys will really enjoy the red zone when they see Cordarrelle Patterson running for a touchdown. And, that'll be just fantastic for them.
I clicked him in a best ball draft the other day.
There you go.
Cordero Patterson, you did? You took Patterson the best. Good for you.
I'm not expecting that team to be good. So.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, if you draft him late enough, it's Arthur Smith. It could pan out big time. You know, you never know with these types of things. Farrell, I'm going to be honest with you. I have it's probably because we went on air a couple of days early this week. I don't have any emails right now for McKenzie. Okay. So this is up to you for the final question of the night.
Quickly, I will give it. What is your guy? Let's say a guy we haven't talked to about, because you know all the guys. What's your guy that you're really, really high on that you don't want to leave off your team this year? And then who's just a guy that you can't click? And it can be any round, but just a guy you won't be in business with.
So we've already touched on a few of the guys that I look at, guys that I want to target in most drafts, and that's Brock Bowers at tight end. Is a guy that if I don't have a tight end in the first four rounds, I'm really hoping to get Bowers in the sixth round every time. And then the rookie wide receivers in the ninth round. I think that both Brian Thomas and Rome Odunze are both very good values at that point. Both those guys were Thomas has the clearer path to targets, but to me, Odunze was also a phenomenal prospect. I think Odunze is another elite. He's a step down from Neighbors, don't get me wrong, but I think Odunze is an extremely talented player. That's a wide open wide receiving group. And again, if I'm taking him as my fifth receiver, which I often am there, then I want the guys who are the most talented, because especially in the FFPC, when all the money's at the end, I want to have the guys who are putting up the most points at the end, and betting on a rookie is usually something I want to do there. In terms of fades, I mean, a lot of it comes down to, I would say a couple fades. I don't like veteran receivers changing teams. I just mentioned that with Davante Adams, who I don't click a ton on Davante Adams because I do think he's getting a little bit older, but I don't mind that pick. Stephon Diggs has been a guy that I haven't really been clicking at all. An older player changing teams, two younger receivers that I like a lot, both with him. Though I will say, I've seen Diggs fall the mid-fifth round in a couple of drafts recently. If he starts falling there, then I'm not as opposed to that. I can't get behind his quarterback price of CJ Stroud, though. Like, if I'm taking a quarterback in the first six, seven rounds, I want some rushing upside, or I want you to be Patrick Mahomes, and you've just done this for so long where I'm convinced that, all right, you are the best quarterback in the NFL, and you actually have, you know, super elite passing upside in your range of outcomes. Maybe CJ Stroud does, but I'll have to let him prove it to me first.
I think the Odunze thing is interesting. Wide receiver 46 at the 906, given the fact that you don't like veteran receivers changing teams. What did we see this year? Keenan Allen from the Chargers to the Bears, right? And if you don't like that, then you should love a Rome Odunze at wide receiver 46 at the 906. So I'm definitely in on that. That makes a lot of sense here. Permar 99 chiming in on the YouTube chat right now. Final question for you tonight, McKenzie. Davante Adams, Stephon Diggs, or Travis Kelce, who are you picking? Now, I am assuming he's asking at cost, because technically you could have more than one of these guys on your team right now. Davante Adams at the 209, Travis Kelce at the 204, and then Stephon Diggs goes at the, oh God, I'm missing it right now. Stephon Diggs, wide receiver 24 at the 407. Can you rank those players at cost right now, McKenzie?
Kelce one, pretty big gap. Davante Adams another, and then Diggs right behind them. I've been getting a little bit of Kelce. To me, after the receiving group of AJ Brown, Puka Nacua, Garrett Wilson, those guys are there. I think the tight ends in that range between Kelce, I'll throw Trey McBride in that mix, and Sam Laporta should all be in a pretty similar range. And I think they're all very, very solid picks of their ADP, whereas I typically pass on both Davante and Diggs at their current ADPs.
Now, Permar follows up. What if it was not premium tight end between, between Adams, Diggs, and Kelce?
Well, then, Permar, you're playing in the wrong damn contest.
Well, what if he's playing in the KFFSC, Farrell? Then he's not playing in the wrong damn
contest. We always hit premium tight end in the FFPC.
No, I'm talking about the KFFSC.
Oh, well, hell, we'll figure that out once you get here.
Well, in that case, it could be Davante Adams if we're not doing 1.5 points per tight end.
That's a good question. This has just been a true pleasure, and I'm glad we did this tonight. This is fantastic. I've really, really enjoyed this. And I think our listeners when you deal with people that are in this business every day, I got one question for you, because I work in football in a lot of different ways. When you're doing your research for your job, How do you stay focused and not let the fantasy football invade your mind space and you stay in a position? Because I'm hopping back. I'm like playing a checkerboard, man. I wish it was a chess board, but I'm playing a checkerboard with football information that comes across all the videos, the computer, and my telephone every day.
Well, the nice thing is when you work at a place like ESPN, and you got a lot of like-minded people like you. So there are people at work I can talk to about these things. You know, I'm working on my show, ESPN Bet Live, today, and the person sitting next to me in the control room, I'm like, I'm on the clock in this slow draft right now. What do you think I should be going with Cortland Sutton or Blake Corum here? Something like that. So, you know, that's the nice thing about working at a place like ESPN. There's so many good people and things like that. So, I have a great answer to your question, to be honest with you. I don't really stay focused. I'm always scatterbrained, and I'm always thinking fantasy football. So
I think it's an advantage.
Yeah.
It very well might be. And will that advantage play out to a million-dollar grand prize this year for Mackenzie Kramer? We will find out. At MacNova on the X is where to follow him. And obviously, if you want to follow his poker exploits, Mac_poker is the best way to follow like everything you're doing with ESPN. It just simply go on to ESPN Bet. Is that what we should promote or send the people to right now, Mac?
Yeah, Monday through Friday, ESPN, Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. ESPN 2 typically is ESPN Bet Live, Tyler Foljam, Joe Fortenbaugh,
right?
Aaron Dolan, a whole cast of characters in that show. We do our betting show every week. I build a lot of graphics for that, come up with a lot of the research for it, and then you know, but the thing is, in research, you kind of touch on every different show on ESPN as well as ESPN.com. So I contribute some articles on ESPN.com, especially during fantasy football or during football season and fantasy football season. Mm-hmm. But typically I do more on the betting side. I used to do more fantasy stuff back when I worked on Matthew Berry's show. Then I decided I would rather live in Los Angeles than Bristol, Connecticut, and moved out west. And then when they moved me back east, somebody else took the fantasy gig. So now I'm on the betting side of things. So I kind of push the betting side of things, which betting and fantasy football are very related in many ways. I'm not a big props better, but I really need to get more into that because there's so much overlap between those two.
Well, I'll be honest with you. Farrell and I both hung out with you at Planet Hollywood in Las Vegas this past year, and it was great meeting you there. Let's reconvene. Let's figure out some prop bets for season long prop betting for 2024.
Take unders.
Yeah, take unders. Well, that is where we'll start for everything going on with 2024 NFL season. And it was certainly a pleasure. I'm so glad we got to do this. I know the listeners, the feedback has been great so far in the YouTube chat. It was so awesome hanging out with you and picking your brain. A guy who has drafted a lot of teams tonight already in the 2024 FFPC season, Mackenzie Kramer, joining us tonight. Mackenzie, I can't thank you enough. Thank you so much for coming on. Good luck in all your leagues this year. Can't wait to hang out with you again, man. This was so much fun.
Yeah, I apologize for not doing this earlier. I know you wanted me have me on last year, but I was moving across the country and I'm really busy with that.
Totally good with that. Like, I understand everything that was going on. Anytime we're getting you on these airwaves, it's always good.
I wish I could see you out for the FFPC party this year, but unfortunately, my friend's having a bachelor party that exact same weekend. Oh! I told him, I'm not available that week. And then all of a sudden, and he's like, well, everybody else is available that week, so make it work. And I'm like, all right, fine.
I've been in those situations before. I know exactly how that works for sure. Enjoy the bachelor party.
Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
When we hang out again, we will hang out again. And good luck this season. Thank you, Mackenzie.
Maybe even Kentucky. I had a great time in Louisville the one time I went there.
Yes.
One time, a repeat performance then must be scheduled.
Went to KFC Yum Center with College Game Day. Hung out some bars. Was it 8th Street Dive and 5th Street Live? Something like that. I don't know what it was. It's been a while. But back in Louisville was actually good at basketball.
Farrell, that's what we need to do. Is you and me and Mackenzie will hook up at some bar. We'll have some bourbon. We'll figure this all out. All the season long props. World problems will be solved, and it's going to be a great time.
I think we'll put that in concrete, bro.
There you go. Thank you, Mackenzie. Be good.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you very much.
That is Mackenzie Kramer, ladies and gentlemen, the 12-time FFPC champ. Follow him on the X at MacNova. And, of course, for all his poker exploits, Mac_poker is where you can find him there. And then check out all the ESPN broadcasts that he's doing, doing all the research for those as well, at ESPN Stats Info and, of course, at ESPN Bet. And check out all the times that his show is on the air on ESPN2, as he just alluded to. Farrell, that is going to complete our show tonight, man. Thank you so much for being a part of it. We're going to do this again. I know this is taxing for you, but I promise you, after next week, you will get a full week off. It's going to be great. We will do this show again next Wednesday and next Friday. It's going to be a blast.
Two times one week.
That's what it's all about. KFFSC.com is where to sign up for the Kentucky Fantasy Football State Championship. Do it now. KFFSC.com. Farrell, thank you so much, dude. That is Farrell Elliott, the definitive commissioner of fantasy football, hanging out with us on the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour tonight. I do apologize for the tweets and emails and the all the stuff in the fantasy feedback segment we didn't get to tonight. I promise you, because we have two shows next week, we will have the opportunity to hit a lot of that stuff coming up in June 26th. Which was going to be great. I want to thank Mackenzie Kramer. I want to thank Farrell Elliott, the FFPC, Rob Bryce, and, of course, each and every one of you. We will be back next Wednesday. Richard Lowe and Bob Tittman will be our guests. We'll have two guests next Wednesday. They have competed in the FFPC Pros versus Joes 5 years ago. They are back with a vengeance this year, playing in the FFPC Pros versus Joes, trying to win a 2025 FFPC main event where they can compete for a $1 million grand prize. So we'll talk about their draft so far this year and what they're going to be doing in Pros versus Joes. It's going to be a lot of fun. Join us at 10 p.m. Wednesday, June 26th, right here on this FFPC social channel that you're watching, be it YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, whatever. Tomorrow night, the High Stakes Fantasy Football Show on the Better Sports Network goes live at 7 p.m. Eastern. Player profilers Theo Greminger and Dave Terpoli will be on with me drafting an FFPC best ball tournament team live on the air as they gun for a $300,000 grand prize. That's going to be a lot of fun. We'll take you through it. We don't often do live draft coverage on BSN, but that is going to be taking place tomorrow. So don't miss that. 7 p.m. Thursday night. On the FFPC socials as well as the BSN socials. If you want to look for action in the FFPC, the midnight draft is already filled, so apologize. You can't get into that, but we do have a 12:30 a.m. draft that is signing that is taking signups right now. It goes off in about 73 minutes. Sign up for that. I'll be commissioning it. MyFFPC.com is where to go for that. A $1 million grand prize at stake and a $6 million grand, $6 million prize pool as well. Empire Leagues, Dynasty Startups, the FFPC Best Ball Tournament, and the Superflex Best Ball Tournament, all available at myffpc.com. Remember, with the Superflex Best Ball Tournament, $35 to enter, you can win a $100,000 grand prize and $125 entry fee. This is what Greminger and Terpoli are doing tomorrow night. You will be eligible for a $300,000 grand prize that is $100,000 more than last year. So that is what you need to be checking out at myffpc.com. Remember to like this video, subscribe to the channel, comment on the video, share it with your friends, share it with your enemies, and get notified each and every time we go live, which will be tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Eastern time. For Rob, for my best friend Bryce, for Farrell Elliott, and of course, for Mackenzie Kramer, I am Eric Balkman. Saying your weekend officially starts now.
This has been another episode of the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour presented by MyFFPC.com. It was broadcast live and was watched around the world. Balky and Farrell will be back next week with more analysis, more interviews, and more advice from guests much smarter than they are. Thanks for watching, and we'll talk with you again next week.
Thanks so much for watching, everybody. This is public knowledge, and I'm just going to get through this as fast as I can because I haven't really been reacting well to it lately. But I do want to let everybody know, if you're Facebook friends with me, you already saw this. I'm going to put it on the X right now, that, my brother actually passed away, early, in, on Monday morning, at the age of 43. He had some issues with alcohol and substance abuse, but I don't think that should overshadow the fact that, he was such a talented person in regards to academia. He, you know, ever since he graduated high school, when he was going to college, he had scholarly reviewed papers published He was a contestant on Jeopardy 13 years ago with Alex Trebek, taking second place in that episode. He was such a great athlete in regards to baseball and golf and basketball and so much more. And he left us way too soon. He is a player, or excuse me, a player. He is a guy that was my younger brother that I always looked up to because he was so much better in everything than I ever was. And I'm eternally grateful for the time I got to spend with him this week. I'm okay. My family's okay. We're working through this. We have our funeral for him on Saturday, and I think we're going to be okay. The message that, not that I am sending to you, but I think that my brother would send to you, is to live life to its fullest. He is a guy that lived in the United States the majority of life of his life, but he also spent extensive time in Japan. He also spent extensive time in Bolivia, South America, and was a foodie. Like, just, he loved life. And I think that's what we need to take away from this, is to go out there and love life as much as you can, and make sure that you are taking advantage with every minute you have on this plane, and doing everything you can for your loved ones, family, friends, whatever, which is what my brother Jared did. And it's how I continue to live my life. With that, I'll just wrap it up. You don't need to reach out to me. I'm going to be okay. But just make sure with your loved ones, your friends, and the way you personally live your life, just make sure you're not shortchanging yourself, and make sure you're doing everything you can to enjoy every part of this plane of existence that we have right now until we move on to the next one. And that's what I'll leave you with, because that's what I would want for you. And most importantly, that's what my baby brother would want from you as well. Thank you so much for watching. We'll be back tomorrow on the Better Sports Network right here on Thursday. And we'll be back on this show next Wednesday night with Richard Lowe, Bob Tittman, Farrell Elliott, and myself. Be good, everybody. Thanks so much for watching. We'll talk with you again very, very soon.